I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening. And I do appreciate it enormously. Both Molly and I do.
Bearing with us in our bit jumbled up season.
Yes, for bearing with us in this quite complicated autumn. Mm. It seems as though we're all going to get snowed on next week.
Does it?
Yeah, according to the Sun.
Really?
Mm.
I could do without that. And also, when you listen to this, it will be way after the time we're talking about it.
Okay,
so
I'll keep quiet.
It's a bit confusing.
I'm confusing you. I don't want to confuse you.
No, it's not. I just, to be clear, we're recording this a bit in advance because of Dad being so busy.
Yeah.
I see no snow on my weather app, just rain. Yeah. I need to buy a new umbrella. Umbrella. I think I might buy myself a new coat for my birthday.
Oh, good-o. I was thinking of buying a new coat. I've got a swathe of material down
here.
Yeah,
I see that.
Yeah.
That's a very nice colour.
Yeah.
It looks slightly like a carpet sample.
Well, I like carpet coats.
I know you do.
I wear them all the time.
So what? So they sent you the... Does it already exist?
Yeah, the swathes do. It's just whether we want to make one up.
Oh, would they make up the coat for you?
Yeah.
What, in the pattern of a coat you already have?
A slightly different pattern.
Mm, nice.
Slightly different.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. How many coats do you have? Two?
Two. I have one very, very old one and one newer one, which I use for Murder by the Sea.
Yeah.
But if I were to do something else, I would probably want to have another coat.
Well, you should have another coat anyway. Coats are the best thing to buy. They're my favourite things in my wardrobe. I need to buy at least one coat per season.
Okay.
Well, but then when you have the coats, you see, that's it. And the good thing about dressing in the autumn and winter is that it doesn't really matter because if you've got a good coat,
That I agree with wholeheartedly. Wholeheartedly. I'm a great lover of overcoats.
Coats and shoes are the thing to really...
Invest in.
Coats, specific, for me, are really the...
Yes, I've left... One of the strange things about touring is you can leave your clothes... your matinee and evening clothes, and they transport them for you.
Oh, that's very good.
So you don't have to put them in a suitcase.
Lug them around.
They just put them in the truck.
Do they launder your shirts?
Yeah, yes.
Oh, very good.
Yes. It's very remarkable.
I think I'd like a camel-coloured coat.
I
don't have one, and I feel like you should have one in your...
I think so.
A trench. A trench, a mac, an overcoat, a proper overcoat, one that's camel.
Well, do you remember that wonderful scene in Sunset Boulevard when Gloria Swanson buys William Holden the clothes? You know, you've got to have a white tie. You've got to have a tuxedo.
That's how I feel.
And the salesman says to Holden, because it's quite clear that Gloria Swanson is paying for all this. And he has an aside to Holden which says, well, if the lady's paying, why not have the vicuna?
Yeah. I did have someone who used to buy the coats for me, but now I had to do it myself.
Well, I think it's quite nice to buy your own coats.
Yeah.
I'm rather in favour of that.
That's what I should do.
In the wake of that coat conversation, this is a particularly appropriate story to be doing.
Oh, is it? Oh, how excellent. What are we doing this week?
Well, we're doing the story of Janet Andrews, which was suggested...
by our producer, Sam's dad.
It's Jane Andrews, I'm sorry. Jane Dawn Elizabeth Andrews. Which was suggested to us by our producer's father. Mm. And, believe it or not, the title I would like to use is The Killer Dresser.
No.
Yes, it's an entire coincidence.
That's so funny.
She was a former servant and royal dresser. Sarah, Duchess of York.
I love it already. Okay, so here we go with The Killer Dresser.
Jane Dawn Elizabeth Andrews was born on the 1st of April 1967 in Cleethorpes in Lincolnshire. She's still alive. She's now aged 54. She was born the youngest of three children. Her father was a joiner and her mother was a social worker. And as a child, Jane was very promising. She went to grammar school, but the family fell upon rather hard times and they moved to Grimsby on the sea in and she went to Hereford Secondary School. Perhaps the move unsettled her. I think it would probably be fair to say that it did, because she developed all those classic horrifying symptoms of teenage girls. She became very depressed. She got eating disorders.
Quite sweeping, that, Dad. So
I'm sorry, Donnie.
Quite a sweeping generalisation about teenage girls.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you keep me up to the mark, Donnie. I'm not making a massive generalisation, but I am saying
just
that
saying
it is,
that those
does happen.
Can be, yeah.
Yeah,
and she got, and that's a very unfortunate thing.
Yeah, she got panic attacks, and at the age of 15, she attempted suicide. Well, she seemed to steady a bit. But at the age of 17...
Probably
she
didn't have very good mental health resources back then either.
I'm sorry, darling, I'm going deaf. What was that again?
I said they probably didn't have very good mental health resources back then.
No, they wouldn't have done. And we were talking about the mid-80s, mid-80s. She got pregnant...
When she was 17.
When she was 17, and then had an abortion, which she later described as traumatising, and I can quite understand why.
Totally. I always used to get really upset at school if I knew anyone who'd had an abortion.
Yeah.
Which did happen.
Yeah, no, I accept that. Anyway, things took a bit of a turn for the better.
Mm-hmm.
She enrolled in a fashion course at Grimsby College of Art and did rather well. And she went on to help work for Marks and Spencer's, working on children's clothes. Obviously had quite a lot of talent. It was a bright girl, if a little troubled, to be fair. But she also was a bit of an ugly duckling. You know, never quite fitted in. Slightly uncertain. Probably tried a bit too hard, particularly when it came to boys. But she answered an ad in the Lady magazine, which asked for someone to become a personal dresser.
The Lady magazine is like the oldest, most old-fashioned... I don't even know how you would describe it to someone who's not from the UK. It's like, it's the sort of place posh people go to find nannies. It's like a magazine about being a posh woman, basically. Somehow
on,
it still exists.
That would be a bit hard.
Am I doing it a disservice? There's some good journalism in there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what its logline is. Its tagline, I don't really know.
Well, I think the Lady says it all.
Mm. But yeah, it traditionally was specifically used for people as well to find positions and like to become an au pair or...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so she answered an ad.
And I can assure you that...
you used it to find nannies
for us. We used it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's, anyway, about 6 months later, we're now... She would nearly be 21 or just over 21. And she gets an interview with the Duchess of York, Sarah Ferguson.
Fergie. The one from the Black Eyed Peas.
who takes to her and appoints her her personal dresser. Perhaps it was two ugly ducklings recognising something in one another. You know, there was obviously some bond there. Perhaps it was Sarah always felt a little bit of an outsider and Jane was a bit of an outsider and perhaps there was a recognition somewhere in there. But nevertheless, quite well paid. She worked at Buckingham Palace where the Duke of York had rooms. And she bought a flat in Battersea Park. And it would be fair to say, embarked on what it would be reasonable to call a fairly opulent lifestyle. I mean, lots of things fell into her lap. She met extraordinary numbers of people, often very rich. She was a kind of, you know, she's smiling. If you look at the pictures, again, I urge you, if you Google her, you will see the pictures of this smiling woman, often beside Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of York. But as the time went on, all sorts of allegations began flying about. That she'd taken money and from Sarah, and that, but they were never proved. They were never, no charges were ever brought. It was just rumour. Anyway, in August 1990, after a really quite short courtship, Jane married Christopher Dunn Butler, an IBM executive, a good more 20 years or more older than she was. She was 23. But they divorced 5 years later. Jane saying it was the pressure of work with Sarah Ferguson, Sarah, mm-hmm. Duchess of York, and her husband saying, rather contradictorily, that she was repeatedly unfaithful. She herself admitted later, I had a couple of flings, I'm not proud of it. Following the divorce, she met the son of a Greek shipping magnate, but they broke up and she was so angry she trashed the flat they shared. She was clearly short-fused.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she liked the lifestyle that she suddenly found herself leading. She wanted to be, you know, quotes, well looked after. And as she liked that, to be fair, she liked the good things in life. And I'm not denying that she should. Perfectly reasonable. But it's also a suggestion that she may have been bipolar. In other words, there was an element of bipolar disorder.
She had some mental health issues.
Yeah. Then other rumours started that Sarah, the Duchess of York, was having a fling with a Tuscan count who also had feelings for Jane Andrews. Well, we don't know. All we do know is that not long after that story broke, Jane was dismissed. The palace denied any rumours and said it was merely a matter of cost cutting. It may well have been. But one thing is then abundantly clear. Jane has no longer got access to
all the jazzy stuff.
Yes, all the heavy stuff. So she takes up with a former stockbroker called Thomas Ashley Cressman, always known as Tommy. And this is in 1998. She moved into Cressman's flat in Fulham because she was hard up by this time. She sold the flat in Battersea Park and has been running through the money. She clearly thought at this moment that he was a ticket to ride. He was rich. He was handsome. And after all, she's by now 31. And to some extent, the clock is ticking, or she sees it. She sees Cressman as a perfect father of her children. In September 2000, Jane and Cressman went on holiday to Italy, to a villa in Italy, and then visited his family's villa in the south of France. It's that kind of family, you know. Now, Jane has been expecting that this trip would lead to a proposal of marriage. It didn't come. And worse still, Cressman makes it abundantly clear that he has no intention whatever of marrying her.
Oh dear.
When they get back to this country after this rather sumptuous tour of Italy and the south of France, they start rowing. Not really surprisingly, to be honest, because she's got expectations that he wasn't about to fulfill. Mm-hmm. And at one point during one of these rows, Cressman actually calls the police and says, and I quote, "Somebody is going to get hurt." But in fact, nobody was. One night, after another row, when Cressman was asleep, Jane hit him with a cricket bat and stabbed him in the chest with a knife.
Jane. That's wild.
It was a very brutal attack.
Mm.
She fled the scene, called her ex-husband, Christopher, and disappeared. Well, believe it or not, the Duchess of York, Sarah, issued an appeal. Please come forward. You know, it's important. Police must sort this matter out. And finally, she was found by the police in her car, having taken another overdose. She was found in Cornwall, of all unlikely places. When the question of what happened to Cressman was raised by the police, she said, "I've nothing to do with me, and he was being blackmailed by some unknown person or persons." And nevertheless, the police were confident in their own mind. After all, I think there was a lot of forensic evidence that she was indeed Cressman's killer, and they charged her with murder. On the 23rd of April 2001, she went on trial at the Old Bailey. The prosecution went for her. They called her a woman scorned, a bunny boiler in the wake of the Fatal Attraction, the famous Fatal Attraction movie. And she could, if she wasn't going to have him, no one was going to have him. Mm. And then perhaps classically she made the mistake that so many people do, which is she testified in her own defence. Well, it's tempting, but often it backfires. Because what she did effectively in the trial was blacken Cressman's name. She started talking about his sexual obsessions, that he beat her up, he broke her arm at one point. She claimed also that she'd been abused during her childhood. The jury took 12 hours to reach a verdict. They were not convinced by this evidence, and she was sentenced to life. A psychiatrist who prepared a report for the court suggested that she did indeed suffer from some kind of borderline personality disorder. She went to jail, a minimum of 18 years. Sorry, 15 years. In 2009, this is 8 years into the sentence, one word for it would be said, is she escaped. Well, it was an open prison. I think she just walked away. And she was found about 6 miles away, staying with her family in a hotel. I mean, it's not what you describe as Ronnie Biggs. It's not a run for Brazil or something like that. She was found in a hotel not far from the prison. I mean, okay. Nevertheless, to be fair, in June 2015, an early release was agreed. She had been a perfectly reasonable prisoner, and she wasn't charged with that escape. I mean, I think it was seen as a mental episode. And she was released, providing she went to live in a probation hostel, not hospital. But in 2018, Jane was recalled to prison after being accused of harassing a former lover. Well, police did investigate, but there was no clear evidence. Nevertheless, she went back to jail. And then she was re-released in August 2019 on condition she stayed in a bail hostel. And at that point, she slipped beneath the public waves. As far as anyone was concerned, she disappeared. Of course, in the nature of these things, in 2021, ITV launched a documentary about her, which suggested, among other things, that she was a danger to all men. And inevitably, one of the tabloids found her. She was back in Lincolnshire, where she was born in Cleethorpes, and she was
trying to live a quiet life, I'd imagine.
Yeah, stacking shelves in Morrison's supermarket, at least some of the day, part of the week. She never apologised to the Cressman family, showed no sign of remorse throughout the trial, the Old Bailey, never issued a public apology. And of course, the Cressman family see her as awful, not surprisingly.
Of course.
And of course, there's been inevitably a whole series of explanations offered. One, of course, being that she can't stand rejection. She just can't cope with it.
And the fact, I don't think that's really an excuse to kill somebody.
No, I don't think it is either. But you can see how you could come up with a broad brushstroke. I think it's a bit of a tabloid generalisation. I mean, she clearly was a very troubled woman. Mm. She's now 54, living quietly. I suspect, is it too simple to say that her head had been turned by the lifestyle and that she couldn't envisage not getting it back, not having it?
I don't know. I don't think you do know unless you're in it, really.
Yeah.
It's perhaps.
I mean, she'd come from humble beginnings. She'd had a bit of a troubled teenage time. She suddenly found herself, you know, among people with lots of jewels and lots of trappings and the high life.
Maybe she just wanted to be loved.
Maybe she did. And I think had I been involved in that documentary, I would have been suggesting that perhaps it was more a call for help than it was. I think the red mist fell. I'm not doubting for a moment that she killed him.
No, I agree. Yeah, red mist is.
And that is in itself reprehensible, to put it politely. But you can sort of see.
Crime of passion.
Perhaps. Would it be in France? Would she have got away with it as a crime of passion?
Maybe not, because it feels if he was asleep, it was a bit yes. like, and they were having, it wasn't like a snap judgment, was it? It happened, and if they were rowing, and you know, it seems to be cause if she really wanted to marry him and he didn't want to marry.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you still got to go on a lovely holiday, still having a nice life.
Yeah.
And also, if you don't want that, then just leave.
Perhaps she felt that she was owed more, you know, that he owed her in some way. Look, you know.
Maybe. But hard to say.
It is. It's a very interesting case. I'd forgotten about it until I remembered the documentary.
Ah. Came out recently?
Yes, this year, 2021.
I don't know what that
is. It's called, I think, Sarah's Killer Dresser.
Sarah's Killer Dresser?
I think so.
We'll look it up. But yeah, that was very interesting.
It is actually, again, I think both things we've been talking about, it's about needing to keep your feet on the ground, you know?
Yeah.
I know I feel that very strongly a lot of the time. You absolutely must have people around you who say, come on, don't be foolish. Do something sensible here.
Looking up the documentary. This new documentary in ITV's Crime and Punishment strand explores the case of Jane Andrews. It is called Fergie's Killer Dresser. On ITV.
Yeah.
Released in February 2021.
Yes.
Very good.
Well,
there you go. Thank you very much. Sarah's story, or just the killer dresser.
Thank you, darling.
Well, you're a very snappy dresser.
Well.
Lauded for your snappy dressing.
I hope so.
What does David wear when you do your show?
In the second act, he wears something different from the first act.
Mm.
But I wear the same thing throughout. Oh, different clothes for the matinee.
Very good.
Yeah. I wear my red smoking jacket.
In the evenings. I do like that jacket.
So, you know, it gives it a bit more of an evening-y feel.
An evening feel.
I should have said, darling, what are you up to? I should have talked about that portrait that my editor.
Oh, my word, yes.
My editor.
I'll put a picture of it on our Instagram. Yeah. Jeffrey's editor to do a portrait of him. It's very sweet.
It's very sweet.
Yeah.
It's very touching.
Very nice.
To be given.
Yeah.
And I'm learning with Molly's help to do a bit more Instagramming, but I have to get more.
Mm. I mean, you're learning to make content for Instagram, but yes, it's still...
I'm learning to make content. Sorry, I stand corrected.
You don't actually upload it onto Instagram.
No.
Muggins over here does that.
No, I couldn't possibly do that. Yeah. It'd be on me.
You'll get there.
Yeah.
We'll get there. But yeah, I don't think there's much other news.
What have you got coming up?
I've been to the theatre. My client Tom is in a play at the Donmar called Love and Other Acts of Violence, which I went to.
Oh, I saw a review of that.
And he is very good in it.
Good.
And I really like the first two thirds, but I don't love the last act. Just because it's not my kind of play.
No.
But it's very good. It's very Donmar.
Yes.
I'm going to Manchester to see my client Tomawa in The Mountaintop, which is a play about Martin Luther King.
Ah, yes. Where is it in Manchester?
At the Royal Exchange.
The Royal Exchange. Oh, that's good. That's a nice house.
I should have coincided it to go when you're there.
Yes.
And I have another client in a play above a pub. You know, it varies.
Yeah, well, of course. Of course.
She's playing Joan Rivers. So,
yeah.
A few things.
I'm just travelling round.
Travelling around the UK.
Yeah. David Suchet and I. He reads his Twitter feed out in the car.
Is that funny?
Keeps us amused. Yes, very complimentary.
Oh, of the show?
Of the show. Very complimentary. Extraordinarily so. I mean, amazing.
You need to tell him to put your Instagram on his Twitter so that you get all the followers.
Yeah, I don't think I could do that.
You don't know how to do that.
No, I think I would be lost. I think I probably need someone to inform me.
Yeah, don't worry.
I'm trying not to. But I am conscious that I should supply more content, as you quite rightly reminded me. And I'm not doing anything too technical.
That's okay.
But I should do more.
I'll take some... Just regular photos. You don't need to do videos all the time. Just pics is also good. Like of the places and like when you're doing your sound checks, and you could take a pic out of the auditorium and all sorts of things.
I'll get the company manager to take pictures of us.
Great. Perfect.
Yeah. We've got a nice, very nice team. We're terribly lucky. We've got a lovely company manager, terrific stage manager, lovely associate director, very nice sound man, excellent. Help us.
Oh, so nice.
Very, very, very nice people.
They're giving you some sandwiches.
Yeah. I eat a lot of chicken sandwiches.
Good. Well, and you need that to keep your strength up.
Yes.
Mm. Good.
And it's It's extraordinary. You get, it all depends what the theatre feels like doing. You know, you can get turn up and you can find nothing, or you can turn up and find all sorts of things. You know, like fruit and water and all. Just you can't know.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't know. It's very. I have to say, it's a privilege.
I'm so glad you're enjoying it.
Absolute privilege, if a bit daunting. You can get a bit apprehensive.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where you just do it, and then you'll look back at the end of the year and think, gosh, look at that, what I did.
Yeah.
Look what I did.
Yeah, I think that's right, darling. So, it is. It's been fantastically good, fantastically interesting. Very, very great privilege to do. And I think I hope make the show better.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure it's fantastic. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
can you wait?
Won't be long.
Well, very good.
Thank you.
Thank you to all the people that help us every time we do this. Sam Brain, our producer, my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, and to Jeffrey for all of the hard work. And to you, the listeners, thank you so much for all your support. We'd be lost without you.
We certainly would. And as I often say, and I should say it more often, this would not happen without Molly's initiative and her drive to make sure that we did it. It is a tribute to her. I'm simply
the one that does all the work.
I'm simply telling stories, but this was Molly's idea at the very beginning and remains her creation, so I have to thank her. And of course, as I say, I'm deeply grateful to so many people for all their support and kindness and messages. I cannot tell you how much they mean to me. Thank you all so much. And as I say, perhaps too often, but it bears repeating, bad things can happen to good people, so do please be careful out there.